We're going to focus in this workshop, just to make sure you're on the right plane, we're going to focus on this workshop on the vision of the laboratory in terms of what we should be pursuing in terms of outcomes. And so if that's not what you're interested in, you're probably in the wrong workshop. But federal law now mandates that laboratories have a plan to improve patient outcomes in particular, but perhaps even the function of the entire hospital. And so it's a key time for laboratories, and so I think this topic is a good one. I'm going to talk about outcomes as an overview, and then we're going to drill down with a second talk and talk about something that everybody has to be doing in laboratories, and that's auto-validation and auto-release of results in real time. And then our third, we'll have some questions and answers. Well, we have questions. We'll see about the answers. We then will have an expert in on closing the loop. The lab is suffering on the ends, for example, getting a clean order, getting a real-time electronic order with all of the billing information and all of the other information that's required to accompany the order. So that's a vexing problem, and we're going to talk about that and how an expert is handling that. And then he's going to talk about what I think is one of the most important things, and that's cooking the data. We're still reporting data like we did 30 years ago, endless spreadsheets of raw data. And I think physicians really want the information cooked. They want it distilled down. We live in a binary world as far as physicians are concerned. They want to know, do I send this person to the cath lab or do I send them home? You know, so somehow or other we've got to become, I think, in our reporting a little more binary and give physicians definitive answers. And so that's going to be kind of the crux of the workshop. We're going to have questions and answers, as I said, after these first two talks, and then we'll have a question session after the last talk, and hopefully we'll end on time. And I do have a timer up here, so I have no excuses. So I think with that, I'll begin my talk. First thing I want to tell you is I am from the University of Oklahoma. This is our campus here. We've one building, seven comprehensive colleges. As Frank up here on the front row will tell you, we've obviously spent all the money on the football team. Well, this is what our campus looked like 100 years ago. And I put this slide up here to illustrate the change that we've seen on our campus. Now we're 35 major buildings, 35 major buildings, four hospitals, two adult hospitals at the time we started this project I'm going to describe to you, and a large children's hospital and a large VA hospital. So it's a large campus. At one time, we had six laboratories serving the laboratory needs for the three teaching hospitals. Now we have one laboratory. Have lots of competition in Oklahoma City, lots of really fancy boutique hospitals, heart hospitals and the like. You know, and our problem here is how do we get people to drive by these really fancy places and come down to our place downtown? There has to be a reason. There has to be a reason for them to do that. And I think the laboratory is key to that reason, and that's what this talk's about. We have two adult hospitals. We're actually merging these two hospitals as we speak, but we have the trauma center over here where the trauma shows up. We're the only level one trauma center in the state of Oklahoma. We also have our seven intensive care beds for chest pain here and shortness of breath. So all of our really acute emergency room patients are showing up over here on the west side of the Presbyterian Tower. You'll see a tower in Oklahoma is about three floors. Down here, about 2.5 blocks away, is the Everett Tower. Now, the Everett Tower has a basement. What do you think's in the basement? Well, of course. I mean, the lab has to be in the basement. 2.5 blocks away. So we've got some issues, don't we? Logistics issues. Well, how have we addressed that? Well, we're using a computerized PEVCO system. Seems like a traffic grid, software driving this thing. It's very smart. So we're sending specimens everywhere We have patients everywhere in our hospital, including outpatient areas, to the automated core lab, that we're going to be talking about. And so it's the idea of real time. We've got electronic orders. We've got physicians carrying wireless pads around, ordering their own tests. We call them wireless pads, but they're the same thing. We have local barcode printing right there at the patient's area. We have nurses collecting samples. And again, we have automated transport to the lab. So we have a pretty automated system. Now, you might want to say, why are you doing all this? Well, we believe that we have to compete. And we believe we've got to get those lab data there in time for the clinical decision making. And we've got to get them there so fast that they're not rate determining in clinical decision making. And that's absolutely critical. So that means we have got to have a real-time process. And my feeling is if we don't get the laboratory data there in time, the data's worthless. We wasted our time altogether. And so the other issue, of course, is hospitals are dangerous places to be. Eighth on the list, I believe, is the published target. So we need to do more in the laboratory to improve the safety of the hospital, and we have a big role to play in that regard. Well, what are some of the issues the lab is faced with? Well, we're running out of money in Oklahoma. You know what DRG means? Well, over in Oklahoma, it means the revenue is gone. And the cost of medical insurance is going up about 12% a year. So I don't think we can expect an infusion of money in the laboratory. We're going to have to do more with the money we have. And what about the technical staff? There's no money and there's no help on the way either. What's happening to technologists in this country? They're going away. What's the average age of the techs in my laboratory? What do you think? What do you think the average age of the techs in my lab would be? It's about 53, pretty close, 53 years old. We had two retirements last week. So we've got a plan for a lab that doesn't have any people in it. And every lab in the country is facing this. This is a crisis. So this is one issue we have to take into consideration with software. Now, this is an interesting chart here. What does it show? Demand for services. When we put in our automation system in the core lab, we had 3.5 million tests in the core lab. How many do you think we're doing now? Well, it looks like 5 million. So the volume just continues to climb. The resources, the technical resources in terms of technologists, continues to go down. Something's got to give. I don't think my lab is that unique. Well, we have automation, don't we? We've spent millions of dollars on computers, right? Are we getting the value, the total value, return on investment of all of those millions of dollars? Of course not. And most labs really are not paperless at all. As a matter of fact, computers have made paper easier to generate. And so we've got to come up not only with new automation, we've got to come up with ways of dealing with information in a paperless fashion. Don't design any more paper solutions. We don't have room to store it. I say there should only be one room in the lab with paper in it. And you can think about that. So we've got to cut through this business. And what about all these arrows? Well, these arrows are on the front end of the laboratory, aren't they? We've done a fairly decent job on the CVs and the accuracy on our automated systems, but we still have a lot of problems on the front end of the laboratory. Now, this is what we've done to greatly simplify. Our nurses are collecting samples at the University of Oklahoma, and so we feel like we have greatly simplified getting the right sample in the right tube. We have this published up on every nursing station. And right sample in the right. How many of you think we've greatly simplified getting the right sample in the right tube? Yeah, it's a complicated deal. You got nurses collecting samples, getting the right sample collected. So at the very least, we've got to have technology right at the bedside to tell the nurse how to collect the right sample. We've got to print the specimen requirements on the label maybe. We've got to do some things to make it easy. This is complicated. There's a software opportunity, isn't there? We do print the specimen requirements right there on the barcode label. We did at least pick instruments that are lithium heparin friendly. You can see that we do a lot of testing out of the light green tubes. And what about when the specimen shows up in the lab? few decisions to be made here, right? Now, this is where we have our crack team of less than high school trained folks, the folks we just brought in off of the street. We never make any mistakes in here, do we? Truth of the matter is, we do make a lot of mistakes. We've got to do something about the decision-making that goes on in the front end of the laboratory. That's where most of the errors are occurring. And so we need decision-making software, a totally roboticized solution on the front end of the laboratory. When you drill down, you see a lot of really ugly stuff. We'd like to sweep under the carpet in laboratories. A lot of dirty little secrets like what? Like pouring off samples. In our lab, we were pouring off 40% of our testing samples, running the risk for mix-ups. You see things like stat. Why do you need stat testing in a laboratory? It's because you've got racks and batches, because you've got a lot of piddle, diddle, and fiddle in your lab. That's why you need stat priority testing. And so you've got to get rid of that. You see specimen handoff, handing off problem samples. Between shifts, that becomes a nightmare. So there's a lot of stuff in the front end of the lab that really has to be gotten rid of. Now let's look at the core lab. This was our core lab in 2002. I call it the not ready for prime time core lab, sort of like an abyss where you toss a sample. The idea here is something good is going to come out of that. We've got a lot of problems in this laboratory, batches and racks. We have big runs. We've got a problem rack with critically ill patients. The samples are sitting there in the rack. We've got to do better. Now, in 2002, we got lots of calls. Now, why are these people calling the lab? They want to chat about the football or the basketball? Basketball now, I suppose. Why? What are they calling about? Where the hell are the results? And what's their worst fear? That you've screwed something up. You've lost the sample. We're continuously looking for samples. We get 2,000-3,000 samples. They call down. They want you to find the sample. Is that an easy process? We don't have a clue where it is in 2002. And they want to add on a test. Well, we can't find the sample. It takes 45 minutes to an hour. So they call. Of course, we put them on hold and played country and western music. Now, when you run a laboratory like this, there are ramifications for the hospital. I call it a new disease, congestive hospital failure. You see, we have the information, 70% of the information that the hospital needs to have the patients flow through the hospital in a smooth manner, but we've got that information sitting around in racks. And for every rack we've got sitting in the lab, we have a corresponding rack of patients sitting around in the hospital waiting for those results. If we don't do something with the tsunami of patients out there getting ready to show up at our EDs, we're going to have a crisis. Now, there's our physicians, not very pleased about our laboratory service. What do angry physicians do? They do what? Yes, they call the lab, and they're very nasty to the few techs that you have left. The other thing is they tell the administrator who approves your budget, what do they tell him? That you're running a sorry laboratory, right? So the administrator's not enthusiastic about giving you more resources because he perceives you don't know what you're doing with the resources you have. And what's the other thing they do that's really a problem for the lab? They order stats. What do you think the percentage of stat orders was in 2002 in our laboratory? About 55%. We had so many stat orders, we had to come up with another category, life-threatening. Now, this is a new attending. This guy really has me worried. I think we've crossed over. Actually, Geronimo is buried in Lawton, Oklahoma. He was a prisoner of war there for a number of years. Very shameful thing. So I think the thing we're really looking for here, and by the way, the first computer ever developed is in Lawton, Oklahoma. Do you know that? The ENIAC computer. They do ballistics there. And I actually tried to fire it up. It's all tubes. It's huge. But that's another story. Healthcare dilemma, then, is can real-time laboratory services shore up the lab and give us a way to survive, get the information to physicians in time for clinical decision-making? So here we were in 2002, lots of freestanding hospitals, lots of testing, using old solutions, people-based solutions, one-horse solutions, as it were, hoping that we could deliver the goods for modern health care, throw more people in there, or is the solution decision-making computer systems, robotics, point of care using biosensors and immunosensors? Is that the solution? Well, I have to say we do need a sports car. This is my sports car here. I have a 69 Vet. So when I get ready to go, I've got plenty of power, and the lab of the future needs to be just like a sports car, not like that previous slide. So the new paradigm is indeed technology, automation, using all of the ologies that we have at our disposal, and then some. I'm talking about a perfect laboratory system here. Now, I had to come up with an illustration of perfection here, and this was easy. This is my granddaughter, Cassidy, and she's obviously perfect, and we need a perfect laboratory. And what is a perfect laboratory? Well, it's a laboratory that gets out of the basement and starts working with other folks in the hospital, where we actually start giving the lab back to physicians. Novel concept, actually working with other folks. This means that you're going to be doing more and more point of care. Point of care is going to probably be about 40% of the testing volume in the lab of the future. We've got a big point of care program. We run it out of the core laboratory, and you need lots of middleware solutions. We'll talk a little bit about that, but you can't leave out the point of care initiative run out of the core lab in your plan. The other thing is you've got to have a fantastic core laboratory. You've got to have a core laboratory to be proud of. And that means we've got to do lots of automation in the core lab. I call it the real-time queueless laboratory. When we put everything together, we've got from the order, electronic order, all the way down to the reporting of the results, we have no batch processes. Everything is real time. And if you can't do everything in real time, your only other option is to do it point of care. And so that's kind of what we're talking about here today, is a real-time laboratory. Now, how do you have a real-time laboratory? That means you've got to have expert decision-making software across the board for every step in the process, from the electronic order, from the transport of from the labeling of the sample, down to the actual reporting of the results. You've got to have expert software driving all of these steps, because there's not going to be any people to make the decisions. So if there's no people in the lab to make these decisions, the software is going to have to make the decisions. And so that is the way we're looking at it. Now, our laboratory obviously has had some success with this, but the only reason is we've had great vendor partners. A lab can't do this on its own. It's too complicated. It's too technical. So the role of the vendor is increasing exponentially in solving these problems. And so it's appropriate that we have a mix of vendors and lab folks here, because you guys are going to be the partners, a close 50-50 relationship. Now, one of the things a good partner can do is he can come into your lab and help you take a real close look at your lab and see what you've got. This is a really important thing to do here, because you shouldn't really change anything in your laboratory until you really understand why it's the way it is. And so you've got to do some lean. We took a look at all of our processes in our laboratory with a vendor partner, and they found 48 processes of piddle, diddle, and fiddle. And the biggest process we got rid of over here is the stat process. We got rid of that entire line here of priority testing in our laboratory, because we're running a first-in, first-out laboratory. We also found a lot of other steps over here we were able to eliminate using lean. And so we have an automated laboratory now, pretty much some manual steps. All of these colored blocks over here, these jaundice-looking blocks, are all automated. So we've eliminated almost all of the analytical batch testing. The laboratory looks a lot different. We have automated centrifugation. We have track loading of instruments. We have software that sends samples to the most available instruments, so the track software is very intelligent. We have immunoassay online. We have a stockyard over here online. Now, why do we need a stockyard for the samples, refrigerated stockyard? Why do we need that? Yeah, for add-on testing. You've got to have a solution for reflex testing, and you've got to have a solution for add-on testing, because if you don't, the tech has to go and look for the sample. And that's a very difficult process, as we described earlier. No department left behind. We're doing the same thing in hematology. We've automated that with a track system as well. So nobody's touching these samples. Everything's flowing. And we've got a dashboard where one person can sit in one place and watch all of the automated track instruments and track systems. That person can watch all the instruments. They can watch all of the results that are being auto-validated and released. Any problem samples show up there. We deal with problems in real time, and we can manually retrieve samples over on this screen. So the person that sits at that station actually runs the lab. And that lab system is all middleware. You know, our LIS vendor, we have a system written in Swahili versions of MUMPS, our LIS system. And it was written a number of years ago, and it really can't handle all of these functions. So there's at least 30% of the functions that I couldn't get the LIS system to handle that we're handling with middleware, especially the functions down close to the instrument. Well, it's all about outcomes, and that's what the talk is about. Let's talk about some outcomes. What did we do with this system? And we did this within 9 months after going live on this. This is a chemistry analyzer. We closed stat labs. In fact, the day we went live on the track system, we closed two stat labs at a savings of about $1.5 million each. It costs a lot of money to run a stat lab. We reduced the staff. We had some per diem help. We got rid of all the per diem help and went with a more lean group. We improved the productivity almost straight away from 0.13 down to 0.1, about a 20% improvement. We decreased our FTE that was just answering the phone. The phone got real quiet. People stopped calling the lab because we were running a predictable service. They didn't have to worry about calling us to say what the heck's going on down there. We started doing more outreach, and we started bringing in more tests from our the send-out list. So we went after the send-out list, and we had more time for error reduction. Now, what are the biggest payoffs, I think, for automating your lab in a total fashion like this? Well, I think doing the business of more reference work, bringing in tests off the send-out list, and then going out at least on your campus and trying to get more business to come in your lab, because you've got extra capacity to sell, you need to get out there, and that outpatient work is fee-for-service. And so we've done that in a big way. Our outreach work is now about 30% of our testing volume. The other thing is we're getting more value out of our technical staff. We've overall improved the productivity of our laboratory by about 35%. And we're performing right now about 15 FTEs below what our target productivity would have been had we not automated. So we're saving about 15 FTEs, figure about $60,000 a year and include some benefits. So there's tangible savings in avoiding hiring new staff. You can bring in additional testing without hiring more folks. But what are the intangible benefits? Well, I think the big thing is if you have a heart attack and you show up at our hospital on Christmas Eve, you get the same quality of laboratory testing that you get from 8 to 5. We have no downtime because we had three chemistry analyzers. We can have stuff go down, and we continue to do our real-time function. We have less stress. Less stress usually equates to less errors. I actually caught some people smiling in the lab the other day. You know, we have a very strict dearth of mirth policy, and so I had to write them up. But, you know, if you're working in a place where it's not fun, where there's no fun, and people dread coming in, you know something? There's no energy in that organization. We've got some energy back now. We've got energy for all these new cap regulations, energy for doing outreach. We had totally lost that energy. Now we've got some of it back. People are still not looking forward to coming in on Monday. That's what I'm hoping for, but... Why does all this work? Well, it looks like a hardware solution, doesn't it? All the tracks and all that business that I showed you, but It's not really a hardware solution. It takes 7 computers talking to each other to make a track system work. And really what it is, it's a lot of expert software running the tracks, a lot of expert software coordinating the track and the data that comes from the instruments. And so we need to really take a look at what a good expert system does for the laboratory. It does reflex testing, for example. It does a lot of the things that we used to try to do manually, canceling tests, auto-validation, auto-release, things of that sort. Here's the thing, though, it really does. It allows 80%, the software allows 80% of the results to flow through the core laboratory without technologist involvement. Because we have middleware that looks at all the rules, and the rules fire, and if the rules allow the results to pass muster, and there's no problem with the sample, the results just flow on through. Now, if there is a problem with the sample, the software tells us. So it's a complete change in paradigm. We used to be looking at samples to see if they're hemolyzed or lipemic or icterus, and now we build that into the rules. So we don't release a potassium result that has gross hemolysis. The rules call it out for us. And there's lots of things. It's firing for about 25 different things, maybe 50 by now. Here's just a few that I have here where it alerts the technologists that they need to get involved and do some problem solving. Now, how did we handle that before we had this tool? Problems. How did we handle problems? What did you do when you had a problem? I've got one person talking here. What? Lots of paperwork, yes. We had the problem rack, right? Sample goes in the problem rack. Now, what happens at shift change when the people come in and they see the problem rack? Well, they walk around it like it's got leprosy. Nobody wants to deal with the problem rack. You know, there might be a sample in there with a 2 potassium and the patient's about ready to code up on the floors. And we've got it sitting there in a rack. We're not dealing with problems in real time. So we've got to do better. Reflex testing. Do you think our techs have to look for the sample now to make a slide? No. The system, the track, does that. It makes the slide when the CBC instrument tells it a slide is needed. Do you think we have to manually look for the urine to do a microscopic examination based on the dipstick results? No. We have software automatically doing the microscopic and then auto-validating the results. We're going to do the same thing in COAG, although we're doing a lot of COAG at the point of care. So we've got all these rules firing, reflex testing, and we've got the system handling the samples. Here's a rule. These are pretty simple. I have the techs putting them in. You don't need to be a programmer to put rules in. We wrote a rule the other day for one patient. We had a patient that had leukemia and like a 300,000 white count. And their potassium was high because of that. So we wrote a rule just for one patient so that we didn't call the physician, get him out of bed. You know, we have rules that fire for maybe 5 times a year. In the past, if you had an infrequent data event like that, how did we handle it? A combination of maybe a physician ordering a unique test and squirrely results. How did we handle that? We handled it with post-it notes on the screens, memos, in-service. And then what would happen when the data event occurred on the weekend with a part-time employee? Yeah, we screwed it up. In fact, we'd screw it up every time, over and over. So you can't run a lab with infrequent data events without expert software to track the problems. Here's an example. I came in one time and we were doing the third heel stick. We're trying to get a third heel stick on a little baby that needed a bilirubin to go home. And grandparents were standing there. Nobody was happy. My tech was saying the specimen's too hemolyzed. They had 3 people look at it. And so what are we doing, a third heel stick on a baby? Now we have a rule that fires, and the instrument checks the hemolytic index and then gives us a message to run the sample on a method that has less bilirubin, has less hemolysis interference. And now we're actually measuring bilirubin through the skin using a BiliCheck instrument. So we've eliminated the heel sticks, and we're sending babies home in 24 hours. And again, the lab's very much involved in all of that. Unacceptable specimens. The specimen's the least controlled part of the testing process. So you've got to have an expert system that makes sure the specimen is adequate in all regards. And so that has to be done by the solution that you're using in your lab. Critical results where the patient's life is hanging in the balance. We have rules firing on the track. We have rules firing on the instrument, rules firing on the middleware, and yes, rules firing on the LIS to make sure that the person, the physician, gets notified that we have a patient with a life-threatening condition. So let's take a look at other indicators of laboratory performance. Well, what's the major problem with point-of-care computerization? Well, we have hundreds of devices, and these devices are hard to hook up. We're used to, in the core lab, LIS systems are used to having just a few devices. And so what we have to do is we have to think for new software solutions for point-of-care. We just can't use the off-the-shelf solutions that we have on the LIS. And so we're using middleware to connect up all of our point-of-care testing devices. We have 70 iStats. We do all blood gas testing at the point-of-care, electrolytes, chem panels. We're doing COAG at the point-of-care in the OR. We're doing cardiac markers at the point-of-care. The dumber the device you have, the more middle pieces and boxes you've got to have to hook it up. A really smart device, on the other hand, can actually use wireless technology and talk to a wireless hub with results. And that's really where we need to go, I think, with point-of-care. We need to have very smart devices, although I do think that we will continue to have a central data manager down in the core lab with a technologist monitoring that. I also think we're going to see more point-of-care built into our critical care monitors. So you need to look for that in the future. We've got to embrace that and help them get that done. The other big problem that we have in our laboratory is outreach. We're still doing some paper orders. We want to make sure that we partner with a good partner that can help us for our outreach work get a nice electronic order with a barcode label so the sample will show up like it does for our inpatients with just a barcode label. We have no paper with the samples that get sent to us. We just have samples with barcode labels. We want to have the same thing for our outpatient work, a totally paperless solution. And so to get that really done, since we have a Meditech that, again, is difficult to program, we have to use middleware to get where we want to go. Billing, huge deal. If you don't do billing, none of this really matters, does it? No profit, no mission. And billing for the laboratory is very complicated. I've worked on this for years. I started on an IBM punch card system, writing solutions for billing. And it's a very complicated thing. Now we're down to HCFA claims, real-time HCFA claims. Electronic signature signs out a surgical path report, and the claim can get filed almost immediately because we have the diagnosis. The T&M code can readily be converted to an ICD-9 code. So we're at a huge advantage for doing real-time billing in the lab, but you see very few labs actually tapping that. Here's an application that I developed that we're still using at the University of Oklahoma and some other places for doing patient billing. You've got to be able to send out a bill for just maybe a dollar or so. The average hospital, it costs about $30 to send out one statement. A lot of our bills are less than $30. That would make no sense. We also have to send out a really nice client bill. It has to be totally accurate, or the monthly clients, will not pay you. So this is my vision of the laboratory. It's a complete information infrastructure. This equipment right here is an information system. The specimens we take out of it are information systems. We're extracting information from samples. We're not doing lab tests anymore. I found a burette in the lab the other day and nobody knew what it was. So we're extracting information. And you think the vendors don't know that? You think Siemens doesn't know that we're in the information business? You think GE doesn't know? Yeah, they're buying lab companies. So how do you become successful in solving lab problems? Well, I think you've got to start with the mess. Now, where's the mess? Where's the mess in the hospital? Well, yeah, that, but I'm talking about patients here, customers. the ED. 50 to 60% of our admissions are in the ED. And where's the tsunami of patients going to show up? Especially the ones with no money. They're going to show up in the ED. So the lab of the future better have a plan for the ED. Well, that means we've got to become not the rate-determining step in the flow of the patients through the ED. Well, let's take a look. These are the tests that EDs use. It's a 12-hospital study. What's going to be rate-determining? Well, chemistry and cardiac testing. So maybe that's where we ought to be focused if we're going to help the lab of the future, or be the lab of the future and help the hospital. Now, when you look at all of these things that we offer the ED, all of these tests, and you put target turnaround times down, our 12 hospitals show the following performance. Some of them are doing pretty good. They're hitting the turnaround time targets 98% of the time. However, some of them up here are not doing quite as well. They're only turning around the results about 90% of the time on schedule. Those are where all the calls come from, right? When you don't hit your turnaround time targets. So that's why people also order test stat. Now, when you take a look at the percentage of where you miss the turnaround time targets, people start languishing in the ED. This is the length of stay in the ED. These are lab performances in terms of percent turnaround time. When you plot these up, four of these labs started improving their turnaround time outlier percent. What did we see? As we improved the laboratory turnaround time percentage and got it down, what happened to the wait time in the ED? Look, it almost goes parallel. And this is five hospitals. This is not just one hospital. Could it be that the laboratory is the most important department in the hospital if we want patients to flow through the hospital? No, I mean, we've been hunkered down in the basement. Nobody even knows we're there. Delays in the ED, the administrator should go down and wag his finger at the lab, not the ED staff, maybe. New concept. So I'm going the wrong way. Here's a lab that was really a poor performer. And again, they got their percent outliers down from 14% to 4.9 and saved almost an hour on the ED length of stay. An hour that can make a difference in survival in a really sick patient. When you plot up the first, the best four labs and the worst four, you can see that there's an extra hour or so that we can save off of the length of stay in the ED by improving lab performance. And this is all published. We've published this in the American Journal of Clinical Pathology. And what it amounts to when you regress the data is about 3 to 7 minutes for every percent the laboratory doesn't hit its turnaround time targets. That adds about 3 to 7 minutes of piddle and fiddle in the ED. So what about automation? How does that help? Well, these were our turnaround time targets for automation. Let's see what automation did to our outcomes data. Now, here's our laboratory, and this is potassium. Blue is a stat request. Red is a stat request. Blue is routine. And we had a 40-minute cutoff turnaround time target for our physicians. And this was our lab before we automated it and put in all the decision-making software. And you can see, even on the routines, we were hitting the 40 minutes. And the stats, we were getting the mean of 30 minutes. So we're doing pretty good, right? We're doing pretty good. You're shaking your head. Well, what's all this business up here? Oh, that's some of these routine potassiums were taking an hour and a half. How are these guys, how are they going to order these potassiums tomorrow? Stat, probably, right? So that's where all the stats were coming from. And what about for the stats? 18% of the time we were not hitting the turnaround time on those. Calls to the lab, right? What's going on? We've got a really sick patient. What's going on? So with automation, what did we do? What did we do? Now we have the stat and the routine potassiums, only 3% of the time are we not hitting the turnaround time targets. In 9 months, the phone stopped ringing. And the stats really went down. I'll show you a slide on that. So by improving the laboratory service and eliminating it as a factor in ED length of stay, we've made a huge difference. And it's called a predictable lab service. This little business over here is failure. See the blue line? That 18% is failure. across the board. It's subtle, isn't it? This is our troponin. We're hitting the troponin for the core lab in 60 minutes. That's our target almost every time. By the way, this little hump here is add-on orders. Our ED docs like to add on troponins. I couldn't get it all out of the data. It's very easy for a physician now to electronically add on a test. The specimen's like a little biological hard drive. They can just dial up and get another result. It's sitting there in the stockyard without technologist involvement. So we've eliminated the need for stat requesting. There is no statistical difference between routine and stat in a clueless laboratory, not clueless, clueless. I asked one of our ED docs how we were doing, and I was hoping to get a compliment, and this is what he came up with. The lab is no longer an issue. And I said, well, you know, maybe that's a good answer. So I went and I did a correlation grid for all the things that I thought that would affect ED length of stay, and I came down, sure enough, the turnaround time outliers for potassium were 0.98 correlated with the non-admit patient length of stay. 0.98. So we were the factor. And all he said was, you're no longer a factor. They've got other things now causing delay, but the lab isn't the reason for delaying interventions, because after automation, our number of patients became more important, and the turnaround time outliers for potassium dropped out. So we eliminated the lab as a factor. And this is why, because we are hitting turnaround time targets 30% here, and we're hitting them 97% of the time now. Even the same thing for non-automated stuff. Freeing up tech time allows us to get these pediatric samples. This is the one-hour turnaround time target down here. This is the 2 hour, and you can see there's no difference even on off-track testing on little pediatric samples. So, and we're using middleware there as well. We're using a DI box over here. And the same middleware we're using in chemistry, we use in hematology. So if you can write a rule in chemistry, you can write a rule in hematology as well. And look what's happening here. Yes. You want to go back 2 slides? That one? This is pediatric potassium in a little microtainer. I'm going fast here. We can come back. It's tough to run a little microtainer on the line. It's a very small sample. So we've come up with another automated plant. I'll tell you about it if you want me to with the questions. That's a very important issue. Look what's happened to hemoglobin up on 6 East. See why they're not calling us about hematology. We're hitting the 1 hour turnaround time just as well as the 2 hour. 90%+. Totally predictable lab service. And this is all because of track automation and decision-making software in hematology. General nursery, these people used to call us all the time. And now we're doing the job. ICU hemoglobins, doing the job. No difference between stat and routine. CSF spinal fluid counts. Meningitis, really serious things that people can die from. We're doing a better job. This was totally unacceptable. We were missing the target 30% of the time for the 1 hour turnaround time. Got to think about the entire process, too, from the vein of the patient to the brain of the physician. Here's a lab that was taking longer to get the sample to the lab than it took to do the test in the lab. Well, if you don't have a good process on the front end, what's your only other choice? Point of care. And the NACB guidelines for cardiac markers, less than 30 minutes. So now there is, we've got a very fancy lab with track automation, but it still takes longer to do cardiac markers in the core lab, even though we've got tracks, than it does at the point of care. It's about 20 minutes to 25 minutes. And you can see we're not hitting the 30-minute target that the NACB and other groups suggest. Well, it's all about decision-making. You can see my granddaughter here made an excellent, excellent choice on nighttime hat wear, and it's all about decision-making in hospitals. I call it the four-way stop syndrome. Do you ever pull up to a four-way stop and somebody doesn't take their turn? What do you do? Does it work? You all just kind of sit there and wave at each other? Hospitals are faced with that, lots of indecision. The laboratory has the evidence-based information physicians need. So if you want the hospital to survive, you know, the basement laboratory is emerging, I think, in the future as the most important department in the hospital for those hospitals that want people to flow through the hospital in an organized fashion. So this is the assignment. Here's a lab test right here. It's taking 5 days, patients in our CCU using changes in protocol and just a lab test, BNP, and dry weight BNP levels. We were able to cut that 2 days. So if you come to our hospital, you'll be managed and you'll be out of the door sooner with good outcomes. Dry weight BNP, just a lab test. Well, it is all about benchmarking. How do you know you're doing great? Well, you got to have databases. You got to have the information. And so that's an information opportunity as well for vendors. You got to be able to have data. It's federal law. When the inspectors show up, they're going to say, what have you done in your lab to make it more responsive for patient care needs, especially critical care? And so you've got to have the outcomes data. Maybe you're doing a great job. Maybe you're a center of excellence, or maybe you're not doing so good. We're lucky all of our places are using the MEDITECH, and so we can get at data and compare with each other. All these data I'm showing you are other MEDITECH folks. Now, the outcome is interesting. We've talked about clinical a little bit. We've talked about process outcomes. But, you know, if you start doing a great job and have the patients flow through the institution, you know, the money will take care of itself. The money will find you. The profits, if you want to call them that, will find you doing the right things for the right reasons. It's all about the patient. I think in the lab we got focused on the lab budget too much. We're only 7% of the healthcare dollar, but I think our data is really can be the salvation for all the piddle and fiddle that we see in hospitals. And so it's a great opportunity. When you have a great hospital, you want to get the data out there. You want people to know your leapfrog scores because that's going to determine which insurer you do business for. It's going to determine patients are going to start looking to see how you're doing on chest pain, and they're going to drive by other hospitals that are not doing as well. People are going to get more involved. And so you've got to have the scores. Now, what's this graph all about? Well, I went out one Friday a couple of weeks ago, and all of my stats show up as red on the middleware that we use to dashboard the lab. Do you see any reds on that screen? No reds on a Friday morning. What does that mean? That means that physicians are no longer concerned about getting their lab data. They're worried about something else. And what's that something else they're worried about? The patient. The patient. This is big. I've never seen a lab do this. This is big. We've eliminated the lab as a factor in ED length of stay. What's our percentage of stat requests from 54% 3 or 4 years ago? What do you think it is now? It's less than 3%. Same physicians with no restrictions. And that 3%, you know, they're probably true crashes. Probably real crashes. So if we get rid of all the really bad stuff, stats, priority testing, pour-offs, all the piddle and fiddle in the laboratory, if we get rid of all that stuff, guess what? Physicians will start treating us better. We won't get the calls. We won't get the stat orders. They'll call it their laboratory, at least our laboratory. It used to be your lab. And we'll finally emerge from the basement and get the respect we deserve as laboratorians, and especially from the CFO and the CEO. So you can tame the beast. I'm tired of hearing all the excuses. I talk to lab people all the time, one excuse right after another. We had the worst laboratory in the country in 2002. Worst laboratory in the country. I was so ashamed I wouldn't take people out there. Now, they did put me in charge in 2002. So you don't have to look in the pile anymore for a solution because the ball's right here. Who remembers this? This is the Oregon game. You didn't get to play in the final game because this guy made the wrong call. So anyway, these are my conclusions. I've taken too much time. But I believe that expert systems and computers are the solution for medical care in this country, not just the laboratory. But I believe if you want to start fixing your hospital, you've got to start with the laboratory. The laboratory's in the basement. We're the foundation for the flow of information. And I believe by eliminating the old processes, the old batch processes, and using expert systems, we can be at the table with the evidence, the real-time evidence, and we can really make a difference in the effective practice of evidence-based medicine, especially for the critical care. Just to show you how smart lab people are, my wife did this sculpture on our campus, size and a half, for all of those folks that donated their bodies to our medical students so they could learn about the anatomy. Such is our role. Such is our role. So I think with that, I'm going to turn it over to our next speaker. And again, we'll have questions here later. Our next speaker is really a pioneer in lab organization. He's an expert scientist, but he's also a process person who has distinguished himself over the years and is very well known. Dr. Denikowski is really a very well thought of person in lab practice, but also hospital practice. And we're looking forward to his talk on the implementation of auto-validation, auto-release of laboratory results using expert decision-making rules. Thank you, Lynn.